At first glance, Derrick Henry is a throwback, right? I mean, he's 250 pounds, he handles nearly 400 carries a season, even his general approach to training, his stated desire to get bigger and stronger, it sounds like it's from a bygone era. But calling Henry a throwback misunderstands the player. How he is uniquely suited to dominate at this very time in football history for reasons that go well beyond just the fact that he is a big back. To understand Henry is to understand exactly how he's able to survive a workload that has simply destroyed running backs in the past, both how he maintains his body and how a unique offensive scheme not only relies on him, but in a way, takes care of him. It's to understand how, for example, in his 182-yard, 3-touchdown performance in Sunday's comeback win over Seattle, his impact goes so far beyond what you can read in a stat line. And it's to understand how, in an era when passing numbers are at an all-time high and running back valuations are at an all-time low, Henry just might be the most indispensable and most important non-quarterback in football. Hi, I'm Gary Gramling.
And I'm Connor Orr.
And we're excited to welcome you to the first episode of our new midweek NFL show from Sports Illustrated and the MMQB podcast. Those of you who already subscribe to this feed are used to the breakdowns and analysis Jenny Vrentis, Connor, and I provide on the Monday podcast. In this space, though, we're going to do things a little bit differently. Sometimes it will be a thoughtful discussion of the week's biggest news topic. Sometimes it will be a Q&A with a guest we find interesting. Sometimes it will be original audio storytelling. And sometimes we're going to dive a little bit deeper into the biggest stories we do at Sports Illustrated. These shows will be unique. And with that in mind, we're starting off with one of the most unique players in the NFL, Derrick Henry.
Hey, hello, Gary. We're going to talk about Derrick Henry Day, and here we are. I just did a fantasy draft for a friend of a friend who was an elementary school teacher, and I was observing this from afar, and Derrick Henry is still going top five in everybody's fantasy draft. I picked him to win Offensive Player of the Year and project him to lead the league in rushing again, but does anybody really care about the fact that there should be some gigantic red flags? Because not too long ago, there was this curse of 370 carries, and that's when the body is supposed to break down. Derrick Henry has bested that each of the last two seasons, but he doesn't seem to be going anywhere.
Yeah, we just don't have running backs that handle monster workloads in the NFL anymore. It just isn't done, except for Derrick Henry. And you look at the last two seasons, the numbers are pretty incredible.
Yeah, so look at 2020, for example. Derrick Henry, including the playoffs, had 396 carries. Dalvin Cook, for reference, 312. So that's really the difference between his workload and sort of the next closest workload. And then in 2019, 386 carries in the playoffs, including the playoffs. Ezekiel Elliott at 301. And so since DeMarco Murray had 436 for the Cowboys in 2014 and then immediately flopped with the Eagles next season, no one but Derrick Henry has topped 350 carries in a season. And so that, you know, he is coming off a 396 carry season now, followed by a 386 carry season. And not long ago, we were looking at this as sort of just the end. Like we said, back in the late 1990s, the Denver Broncos that won back-to-back Super Bowls, Terrell Davis had a 481 carry season, followed by a 470 carry season, and never played more than 8 games. In a single season again. Sean Alexander from the Seahawks had that 430 carry MVP season in 2005 and never made it 16 games in a season again. And you can go down this list of running backs who have had similar workloads and have broken down pretty quickly over time. Larry Johnson comes to mind, Natron Means, Amon Green. I'm trying to think, there's some other ones here. Really, only LaDainian Tomlinson is the running back that comes to mind that has had a consistently heavy workload and held up over the course of his career. Derrick Henry is sort of entering that rarefied air. And people say, well, what about Adrian Peterson? Adrian Peterson's workload was actually pretty well managed over his time in Minnesota. There wasn't a ton of egregiously large workload seasons for him. It was all kind of at the medium high range, which I think allowed him to play as long as he did. And so the question becomes, you know, what happens to Derrick Henry? Sort of what avenue does he take from here?
Yeah, and look, we're early in the 2021 season, but it's working. The first thing you have to know is who Henry was, who he is, and how he's preparing himself every offseason.
I love working out. I love being fit, love being in the gym, lifting weights, running hills, doing all those things I can just so, you know, I can come into training camp and come in the season prepared to carry the load and be able to make plays and do whatever I can to help my team.
Derrick Henry grew up on the northeast coast of Florida in a town called Yulee. As a kid, he would idolize his older cousins, who were all huge and jacked, so he started lifting weights and guzzling protein shakes, expecting to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger at the best, or at least hoping to look a little bit more like them. And at first, it was a frustrating process. He said you could sit there and keep doing bicep curls over and over, wake up, and nothing overnight had changed. But then his body began to catch up to the process he outlined for himself, and something of a monster was born. In high school, Henry rushed for over 12,000 yards and 153 touchdowns. He gained more than 250 yards a game in high school. So I talked to him last winter, shortly after the season, when he was working out at Sanders Fit Performance in Dallas, Texas. He shows up to work with Melvin, a former NBA player, 2 days after the season ends each year and begins an almost daily regimen that slowly ramps up his body back into football shape through 5 periodized segments that can include anything from lightweight training to sprinting up grassy hills in the Dallas area. And on those high-intensity days, Henry could be doing anything from 120-pound curls to weighted hill sprints out in the Dallas backcountry, where Sanders really wants him to simulate the level of physical wear after 3 or 4 or 5 straight carries in an NFL game, getting him to the point where he's not exhausted after handling 6 or 7 or even 8 carries in a row. I'm sure that's something that Mike Vrabel would thank him for later.
I work out at Sanders Fit in Dallas, Texas, with Melvin Sanders. And really, it was just me trying out his gym and seeing if I liked it the first time I worked out. And I loved it. And then, you know, us getting to know each other over time and, you know, and the type of people we are and how we like to work, it was kind of like we were the same person and we have the same mindset.
All right, so Connor, what are we looking at for his regimen here? What kind of stuff is he doing?
So this was sort of a really enjoyable part of the story because his trainer, Derrick Henry's trainer, Melvin Sanders, who's a former NBA player, I said, what are you doing with this guy? And how do you make this all work? And he just started flooding my phone with text messages that were like hundreds of words long and was literally just copying his training files and saying, this is what we do and these are the benefits of it and this is what we're throwing at him. And so I'll read from one, like, for example, like Vital Air Plus 5. He builds as an innovative technology for the improvement of vital functions. And so deals with the autonomic nervous system, which is the primary control mechanism and regulation within the human body. And so Vital Air therapy, you know, it improves basically your regulatory capacity of the autonomic nervous system, and it allows you to control and regulate how the body produces oxygen. And so, you know, that's like, you know, it's above our heads, certainly, but it's like this thing that athletes are using now. It is popularized throughout the NFL, and there's starting to be some science that's dovetailing off of this. And that's what a lot of these guys, their jobs are, is to sort of stay on the cutting edge, see what studies are coming out, and to immediately sort of apply this to the athletes to help give them the edge. And another was red light therapy, which is you know, and some people call it whole red bed or whole body LED therapy, and it's basically a detoxification process that is supposed to help your blood circulation, supposed to decrease inflammation. It's supposed to promote muscle recovery, muscle performance, decrease soreness. You know, there are some pretty impressive claims here. For example, it'll put you in a better mood, so maybe we could all use a red bed in our house if we have $5,000 laying around. So that sounded fun, but it's interesting, right? Athletes are loading up on this stuff because of trainers recommending it and because of the science that is starting to follow it. And you want non-invasive mechanisms to heal that don't involve any painkillers, that don't involve anything that's going to hurt your body in the long term. And so anytime something like this is going to pop up, I think 9 times out of 10, someone in Derrick Henry's position is going to jump at this, because why wouldn't you? It's harmless, and it could help me recover faster after a workout, so that I can build more muscle and sort of create this body for the next season. That said, it really depends on who you talk to around the league in terms of how effective this is. There are teams that are hiring their own recovery experts that are separate from the nutrition staff, separate from the training staff, and that specifically deal in this kind of these kind of therapies. And then I think that there are probably other teams around the league where you look at it and they just say, this stuff is a placebo. Like, you know, there are teams that like to deal in very hard backed science, and if there's only a few studies here, they're like, okay, you guys can go out and get that on your own. You know, if you want to go out and get that stuff, that's up to you. So it really is interesting. We're sort of at a crossroads right now of player recovery science, but there are teams that are literally hiring guys to do this kind of stuff that players like Henry seek out in the offseason.
So the flavor I'm getting is a little bit of TB12 on this stuff. And honestly, I don't know if that's an insult or a compliment at this point, because it's just the science is so new. And if you are looking at a Tom Brady as a very singular anecdotal piece of evidence here, you would be like, yeah, like I want to do what Tom Brady does.
Yeah. So let me, I'll put this to you. I'll put this to the listeners. Do this thought experiment on your own time. And so a couple of years ago, my wife and I went to a vineyard, right? And there's like a wine show, and there's a bunch of vineyards there, and they were handing out glasses of wine. And one of the guys says, I make all of my wine from pears, only pears, because pears are the best fruit in the world, and pears are good for you, and pears won't give you a hangover, and pears are full of natural sugar. And so you stay there drinking all day, and you wake up the next morning and you feel great. Why? Because this guy is convincing, and he's looking at you and he's telling you that you're not going to have a hangover the next morning. And I think that there is an element of that, right? Tom Brady's guru, Alex Guerrero, is someone that has Tom Brady's trust. He has, you know, he's in the most intimate sort of circles of his life. And so he says to Tom Brady, and sure, there is science to support, you know, the ingestion of healthy fats and omegas, and, you know, that nightshade vegetables do contribute somewhat to inflammation. There are studies out there that back what Alex Guerrero is saying to Tom Brady, but it is the relation of the message where it's like, this is going to make you better. This is going to make you stronger. This is going to make you healthier. And it does by virtue of not only the nutrients that you're ingesting, but by the placebo effect, right? This guy that you trust implicitly over everything is telling you that I promise this is going to make you feel better. And so you feel better. And I think that there is an element of this in recovery science where you go into these buildings, you talk to these people, and they are very convincing in terms of, well, there was this study done out of Norway where if you put this, you sit in this bed for 5 minutes, your muscles won't hurt anymore. And I think if you're an athlete and you're always searching for that edge, you're always looking to change the way that you recover and perform, why wouldn't you do this? And of course, you're going to pop out feeling a little bit better. But is that edge, does it necessarily put you apart from everybody else? I don't know. That's something that we can't answer right now. But does it make you feel better? Does it make you work out harder? Does it make you recover faster in the interim? Absolutely.
I guess the worst case scenario is we all look back in 5 years and it's like, oh, it didn't really do anything, but it also didn't hurt you. So no harm, no foul.
I think it's reminiscent of, at a very base level, Gary, I know that when you were younger, tore the roof off of your high school gym, I'm sure. I remember when Monster Energy drinks came out with those like 2 liter things of just like chemical swill, and
yeah.
But there was creatine in it. They would put like muscle building, a very cheap version of this muscle building powder into this like toxic energy drink, and all of my friends and I would go down to the convenience store and we would get those before weightlifting in high school football, and then afterwards we'd be like, that was the best workout of my life. Was that true? No. Like there's no way. We were in this building irresponsibly throwing around weights and not knowing what we're doing, but does the label on the box say that this is going to make you stronger? Yeah. And so do you tend to feel stronger? Yes. That is a huge element of this, I think, personally. But it's interesting to hear Derrick Henry's trainer talk about the science behind it, for him to send the studies which have been done and are very promising. So I don't want to put this into the category of like wahoo crazy science, because I think that athletes do need an option that isn't painkillers to recover. And I do think that there are some great ideas out there that are being tested at a pretty high level. So it's interesting to see where the path will lead in a couple years. But I think this is at least a path that is positive in that it's not going to hurt anybody, right? And one of the therapies like we didn't get to is cryotherapy, right? And that's just time tested, right? You're making your muscles cold. You're helping them heal. And so some of that stuff I think is good in that it's harmless, and that at worst it's just making you think you're getting better.
So that's how Derrick Henry is taking care of his body, but one other thing we kind of have to talk about with him is how the scheme he's in kind of takes care of him, and how he's not really used in exactly the way that a lot of people think he is just by looking at his size.
The wide zone was invented by the late Alex Gibbs and popularized by the Denver Broncos when Gibbs and Mike Shanahan began working together in the late 1990s. These were the teams that won back-to-back Super Bowl wins with John Elway. Talk to Shanahan now, and he'll say it's less of an offense than an entire whole-body holistic approach. And here's why. In the outside zone, everything looks the same. Every play looks like a sweeping run to the outside, which makes passing plays more effective and challenges defenses to defend a system capable of high-wire throwing with heavier personnel meant to stop the run. In an outside zone scheme, everybody from the running back's coach to the offensive line coach need to believe and see the field the same way. The receivers need to line up and run their routes in a certain way. The offensive linemen need to stand a certain distance from one another all the time. It's blocked a little bit like a group ballet, with the offensive lineman on the front side of the play, that's the direction that the run is going, sprinting out ahead of the back and creating walled-off lanes for the running back to cut through. On the back side of the play, the offensive linemen cut block defenders, which essentially means they trip them to the ground so they can't disrupt the play from the backside. This leaves Henry, the running back, with something of an easier job. He takes the handoff and runs horizontally, following the flow of his play side blockers. He has an indicator he's trying to aim for. In some offenses, that might be the back heel of the tight end. And en route to that marker, one of the running lanes will open up and Henry can make one singular cut, sprinting upfield when he's already at full steam. This prevents a running back from simply smashing into the line of scrimmage. It gives plays more breathing room to develop. Most offensive linemen like it because the backside blocking is easier than some of their typical run blocking assignments. And most quarterbacks love it because if a team thinks you're going to run on almost every down, or is forced to pretend you will, then they'll keep fewer defenders in the secondary to guard the wide receivers and tight ends you're throwing to.
I just want to step back for a moment and talk about the landscape across the world of running backs when Derrick Henry came into the league. And at that point, everyone was kind of valuing these big backs, but also backs with three down skill sets. So you think Le'Veon Bell, David Johnson, to a lesser extent, a Todd Gurley. These guys are big backs, but their value is that you can do formationing stuff with them. You can split them out wide. You can send them out on these wheel routes and get your mismatches with linebackers and that sort of thing. Now, Todd Gurley is a big back, but he does not have that skill set. He's pretty good on screen passes, but he's not a guy you're ever going to put in the slot or anything or try and create that sort of mismatch with. So I guess my question to you, Connor, is we have this 240-pound huge back here. It's the kind of thing you used to see in the 90s. Is this thing ultimately going to be cyclical? Is this going to feel like 1994 again in other teams in the league at this point? I guess what I'm asking you is, can I once again take all my no-fear shirts out of the closet and remind people that he who dies with the most toys still dies, or that indeed second place is the first loser?
You're once again showing your age, Gary, because no fear shirts became and one shirts when I was in high school.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just that Silver Surfer looking nebulous basketball man, and mm-hmm. but same thing, he would say the heated phrases like, "I took your game and now I got your girl." And that was a big one that I remember wearing. And then, but I guess never really ironically asking myself if I had the ability to do either of those things, to beat somebody at basketball or to steal their girlfriend. But that's neither here nor there. To answer your question, I would say that yes, it's cyclical. And Derrick Henry just hit the NFL at the perfect time. And you know, before we had talked a little bit about the outside zone system and why it works and why it hit the NFL at the right time, right? Because we're talking about lighter rosters, the defense through the middle, fewer linebackers on the field, more defensive backs. And so you combine the system with Henry, and then you unleash it at just the ideal, absolute ideal time. And I think that the window is still open here, because regardless of what's happening in the NFL, the beauty of a salary-capped league and to have everything structured the way it is that no matter what kind of phase the league is in, there's always an advantageous position group. And so even there was the three-down running back phase until all those guys wanted to get paid. And then I would argue the next wave of market inefficiency players were tight ends. You saw the 49ers and George Kittle. You saw the Baltimore Ravens with their trio of tight ends before they traded Hayden Hurst and what that was able to do for them. And now the tight ends got paid. And now you keep kind of moving on and finding these undervalued assets. And I think Derrick Henry is the perfect example. Now, you're not going to find another 6'4", 260-pound running back, but you are going to find other big-bodied running backs that may have just played a sort of complementary role in college that can immediately come in, they're fresh, they don't have a ton of miles on them, and they can pick up valuable yards for you right away.
One other thing with Henry, and if you go back to the draft season when he was coming out, and the reason he fell to the second round is there was this the criticism of him that, you know, he takes a while to build up the top speed. He's not a he needs a little bit of a runway. But I do wonder if the fact that they've sort of built that runway for him into this scheme, into these runs, into these outside zone runs, I do wonder if that sort of gives him something of an edge as far as injury prevention goes, because, you know, number one, you know where you're going. And let me explain that. I do think a lot of injuries come from reactive movements where, you know, whatever, someone has hit you when you're not expecting it, someone has changed directions, and you are now forced to change directions unexpectedly. And that puts stress on your body that it just ends up being too much when it's all said and done. But in this scheme, it's like the ball gets into his hands very quickly. He has a spot he's running to, and then he's cutting up field. And there's not a whole lot of other stuff going on. You know, he'll sometimes slam to some traffic, and that's not great. But a lot of times he's out there on the edge. It's not quite space, but it's smaller bodies. There's a little more room out there. And I think this, you know, this thought that this 250-pound guy has to basically, you have to slam him into the A-gaps, they don't do that with him.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of the marriage of all of this together is you're basically getting Derrick Henry at top speed on every carry. And so even if the defense plays the run well and they meet him at the line of scrimmage, he's going to fall forward with momentum that he wouldn't necessarily have coming out of a standard I formation carry, and especially not a shotgun carry, because if you think about it, you're building momentum, you're building speed. You know, the what the Titans run allows him to get to top speed before he cuts up and starts venturing vertically north-south, but in a shotgun, ball's just placed in your stomach, and it's static. You're standing still, and so that's why I think it's really interesting, it's really brilliant, and they have really sort of made this a historic Hall of Fame-worthy career out of a back that I think many people would have looked at as just sort of out of place, out of time in another situation. Now, who's the last back that was probably as big and as physical as Derrick Henry? You look at someone like Brandon Jacobs from the Giants, who is of somewhat similar size, but not nearly the shape, I don't think, in the conditioning as Derrick Henry, and was used in that more standard way. So there were good moments with Brandon Jacobs. I remember, you know, vividly them kind of describing that offense where it's just, you know, big people hitting little people and little people falling down. But this is a lot different. This is a lot more, you know, as more of an understanding of the physics behind it.
The last thing I kind of want to touch on here is, you know, we can see statistically what Derrick Henry's production is, how many rushing yards he has, how many touchdowns he has, et cetera, et cetera. But I think there's two things that sort of make him just carry value well beyond what he does as a runner. The first is his value in the red zone and what they're able to do down there when the field is small and tight, and they have been one of the best red zone offenses the last 2 years. But I think there's something that's more difficult to measure, and I hate to sort of be the tape grind guy to wrap up this show, but if you look at what happens when this team runs play action, if you're a defense, if you're a linebacker, the number one thing you want to do to counter Derrick Henry is get to him as early as possible in the down. You can't sit back and wait and be hesitant until this 250-pound guy has built up some speed and come right at you. So when they run play action on these wide zone looks, the linebackers just have to suck up aggressively, more aggressively than ever. And we know that you don't need to establish the run for play action to be necessarily effective, but it is more effective with Derrick Henry because of who he is stylistically and the way he moves and the way you have to defend him. So basically, because Derrick Henry is your back, they have created so much space behind the linebacker level. And Ryan Tannehill, that is his strength, making those throws to that level. And Derrick Henry has just kind of, he's made his life so much easier. And he's made the lives of everyone on this offense so much easier just as a function of who he is and how he plays.
If I was John Robinson and I was the general manager of the Titans, my biggest concern right now would be, because you're not going to find another Derrick Henry. You're not going to find someone that's 6'4" and, you know, 260 pounds that can move like that. But you can probably, what do they say in Moneyball? You can create him in the aggregate, right? You can find a couple of pieces that together will basically create the same person. But, I mean, that is the frantic search right now, because once Derrick Henry goes and once that offense goes, I think so goes Ryan Tannehill, so goes A.J. Brown. You know, A.J. Brown isn't as open as he was before and doesn't have the yards after the catch, which is what he's good at. And Ryan Tannehill doesn't have the windows to throw in that he did before. And so all these things start to sort of slip and stumble. And, you know, it's just a fascinating thing. On one hand, they are building this roster that is perfect in the now, and it has gotten them way further than people have expected. I think the Titans, Mike Vrabel has outperformed his Pythagorean win-loss expectation every year as the head coach of the Titans running the system. And so it's got them out front of this, but it's also so fragile because we just don't know. We don't know if Derrick Henry's an outlier, and because he's so big, he can kind of fend off these hits and he can continue this workload for longer. Or we don't know if, you know, Father Time is especially active in the NFL and he's just kind of given Derrick Henry a little bit longer of a runway.
That's always going to be my focus. As long as I can play this game, and the focus for the next season is Super Bowl, you know, and that's all I'm going to be focused on. I think that's what we all going to preach to each other collectively as a team.